Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very pleased to welcome back, after some absence here, the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And for a long time now, and I mean a long time, he's been stopping by here on the program on the first Wednesday at the 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about cooking. And we always have a lot of fun picking some dish, some style of cooking. Sometimes we talked about cooking from different regions of the country, different parts of the world. And then we say, well, let's talk about that and encourage people to call in and ask questions, tell stories, share recipes. We always have fun. And sometimes we start at one point and then we wander and we we end up some other place. And that's fine. That's not the, you know, a tight adherence to the topic is not the important thing. Having some fun now, that's the important thing. Okay. So, you see, I don't come up with the topics. And Doyle, it's divine inspiration. I don't know. An angel comes to him in a dream with, mm-hmm. with a topic written on a goblet and says, here it is. And so he calls us and says, this is what he wants to do. And he called and said he wanted to talk about chopped liver. And our reaction was something like, okay, if that's what you want to do. But then, of course, secretly we said, what are we, chopped liver? But we said, okay, we're going to go ahead and we're going to do that, and who knows where we're going to end up. Because as I said in the little promo that I wrote, well, it's not going to make anybody's list of health food, probably.
Ooh, no.
For a lot of people, chopped liver is a comfort food. It is a traditional food. Maybe certain times of the year that's something that you have, or maybe that's just it's going to be something that was an essential part of your childhood at relatives. Your grandmother made it, your aunt made it, your mom made it, and it was something that was always there, particularly at holiday times, but you know, maybe not just at holidays, maybe when there would be family gatherings. And I'm sure some people would think, oof, that sounds terrible, and other people would say, no, you've never had it. It's actually really a good thing. So we'll talk about it here this morning. People want to tell us their chopped liver stories? Fine. They have recipes? Fine. Whatever. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So what started you thinking about this?
Well, you may ask. As you know, I had been in London during the Christmas vacation looking at pantomimes and theater and such, and ended up in Connecticut with a former student of mine. And in Connecticut, which is very close to New York City, in Vernon, there was a very fine New York City-style deli. And let's go there for lunch. I mean, I don't eat in New York delis every day, unlike Rachel Ray, who seems to get there twice a week. But so I went there, and oh, there it was on the menu, a chopped liver sandwich. And I said, I owe it to myself because I have never had a chopped liver sandwich. I've heard about chopped liver for years and years and years and years and years. I've never had a chopped liver sandwich. It was worth waiting for. It was so good. I couldn't believe. Now, I've made liver pate. Mm-hmm. And I have made rough country pate using liver, and so I'm not. It's not that I haven't some idea of what that might be like. But no, chopped liver, which everyone they say, oh well, you're not doing it right if you're doing this and putting that in and that in it. And so I thought, well, here I am, and so I had the chopped liver sandwich. I learned a new word, except I've forgotten it. Fessel, I think. It said regular fessel. And I said, what does that mean?
What did that mean?
He said, larger. It's twice the amount. Twice the amount.
Oof.
It's, and then one of my friends has told me since then, it means eating like a pig. You know, that you pig out on the sandwich. And so anyway, I said, how can I do less if I'm ordering a chopped liver sandwich? And so it came, and it was 6 inches thick, and I ate it, but I enjoyed eating it rather than, oh, this is an obligation and now I've done it and everything is all right. I enjoyed eating it so much that I went back and asked the chef how he made it, and got the information on making it. And then I went home to where I was staying and got on the internet, and I found chopped liver sandwiches and chopped liver recipes that just would not stop. I mean, something like 25 in a row. And so I began to examine them, and I found some very curious situations. And I kind of wanted to think about it, because what we're talking about is a very traditional, I mean, it is so traditional that you don't learn it from your neighbor, you learn it from grandmother. Mm-hmm. And many of the recipes that I Googled deferred to their grandmother. Grandmother made it this way. Don't tell a grandmother I'm using chicken livers, you know, things like that. Or I always use this or that or that or this. But many people were using it. And then, of course, then you have to have schmaltz. And where do you get schmaltz? By the way, I find you can buy schmaltz in this town. I've learned.
This is, for the uninitiated, this is chicken fat.
Chicken fat, yes.
Which is an essential part of the... The heart association just makes it that much more special.
I have to agree that it is very, very ridden with all of the wrong fats that you should have. But I've eaten it once in my life.
Well, some people would say, look, have it, enjoy it, have it every once in a while. You're not going to have it every day. It's okay. It's not going to kill you.
Some of my Jewish friends I've said to, they said, oh, I'm going to make some this afternoon. I thought, well, maybe I can start. I wouldn't want it all the time. And I don't think it was ever meant to be all the time. It's sort of using up or taking care of some things you have to. And then I got interested in who's using chicken livers and who isn't. Well, for the most part, the grandmothers don't use chicken liver, although I did bring a grandmother's recipe that used chicken livers. But last week on Alton Brown, he was dealing with liver, and he said, if you got the chance, get chicken livers because they're always fresh, and that the other livers are frozen or old or whatever they are, and they aren't quite as tasty as they used to be when you walked into the butcher and got them. I don't know about that. That was just his spiel. And I used chicken livers for a long time in the 60s, and then it became fashionable not to use them. So I sort of quit. Maybe I'll start again.
I did that same thing that you did. I went on the web and just started looking and had that same experience, came across all of these people talking about their chicken liver recipes or their liver recipes or their chopped liver recipes, and then there was all this family. The thing that sort of tickled me is that there are also a lot of recipes for chopped liver that don't have liver, that are vegetarian.
Yes. There's a vegetarian chopped liver one. Yes.
Mock chopped liver that used things like, we came up with a few. There was one that used lentils.
Lentils.
One that used mushrooms.
Yes, and
one
mushrooms.
That used peas. I think, unless I'm just making this up, I came across one recipe that used, well, here's one that uses either white beans or soybeans. I thought there was one that used green beans. Yeah, here's one that used green beans. So you actually can make vegetarian chopped liver.
That's right.
Although I'm sure that some people would say, well, that's not chopped liver. That's something else, and that's fine if that's what you want to do. But if you want to actually have the real experience, you got to make the real thing.
Make the real thing, and then of course it begs that point of view. You get 9 people into the room, you'll have 15 recipes, because the subtlest changes. I have one here that says this is even fat and cholesterol reduced. Yeah, they only used egg whites, not the yellows of the egg.
Oh, that makes it
and
so much better.
So much better. Yeah, you have to laugh at that, but it pleased me to find that it was a really a viable subject that I think a lot of people sort of be quiet about. So I came back and mentioned it to somebody, and she instantly made chopped liver. And I said, I haven't done this in years. And so I gave her some hints on what to do.
We have somebody to talk with. You want to do
good,
that?
Sure.
All right.
I'm all for finding out what people think.
Callers in Champaign, line 1. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
to have chopped liver, usually every week. It was part of the, I was brought up in a Jewish household, an Orthodox Jewish household, and was part of the Sabbath meal. Most of the time. Okay, so I'll tell you a few different variations on the recipe that my mother and grandmother used.
Yes.
So, first is, it was always chicken liver.
Yeah, all right.
We did have one of those substitute ones when we did dairy meals, since Orthodox meat, when if you keep kosher, you can't mix the dairy and the meat.
Right.
So there was one, a mock chicken liver made with string beans, but I'll leave that aside. You had chicken liver. You didn't use we did eat calf liver, but not as chopped liver.
Oh yes,
it was always chicken liver, and the chicken livers were always roasted because Orthodox Jews or people who are keeping kosher have to roast chicken livers in order to eat them, in order for them to be kosher. So they were roasted directly on a fire. We had a metal wire contraption that enabled us to roast it directly on the stove. So you would roast the chicken livers. You would add what's called gribenis, which is rendered chicken fat.
Rendered chicken fat, yes. The skin part.
Yes, but
yes.
You could add a little or a lot. Raw onions were chopped up. And added to it.
Now, were they added raw or cooked?
Raw.
They were added raw.
Now there was a separate dish where you would cut up liver and fry it along with onions.
Onions, yes.
But that was a different dish.
Okay.
And then we also would add obviously some salt. Sometimes you'd add. You chop up hard-boiled eggs with it, and sometimes not.
All right. For a recipe, how many eggs did you use? You would use it, yes.
I don't know. I don't remember. because it depended on the quantity of chicken liver, and it was all done. According to taste and
yes,
how it seemed,
yes.
Rather than quote a recipe.
Yes.
My grandmother just did it. My mother just did it. And when I helped, I just did it according to what seemed right. You just had a sense of what seemed right. When you chopped them, when you mixed it all together, you chopped it up. It was all obviously chopped up by hand, and you used one of those, I don't know what to call
it. There is a name for it. It's a rounded bottom rocker, kind of a rocker.
That's right.
In a wooden bowl.
That's right. And I don't remember what that's called. But that's what you use to chop it up, and especially since if you made it fresh on the Sabbath,
yes,
you couldn't use electrical instruments.
Oh! What a reason! I like that. Ooh, I think that. Wow! Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Keep going.
I was trying to remember if we ever used garlic, and I don't remember. I haven't made it in years, and I haven't eaten chicken liver in years, so I can't say. And I think you could probably make do without the rendered chicken fat if you wanted. It would be less intense. Rendered chicken fat is intense.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And, of course, it certainly doesn't help your cholesterol.
No, it doesn't, and so we're advised to not go crazy on that. But some of it has to be there for partly tradition, and partly for a little bit of taste. There are some people that put chicken fat on bread, or they
yes.
used to.
Yes, chicken fat on bread,
yeah.
and then rub garlic on it.
Oh,
raw garlic.
Oh,
not on bread, but on toast.
On toast.
We used to toast it and have the rendered chicken fat.
Yeah.
And some raw garlic. Rubbed
yeah.
on. Let me say when roasting the chicken livers.
Yes.
Even though they were roasted on the outside, they were still they weren't roasted. They were. Well, it's hard to explain. They were roasted through, but they were still soft on the inside.
They maybe almost a little pink, but not quite.
No. Because
just soft, huh?
The reason to roast the them is because of the blood content.
Oh, yes.
Orthodox or kosher cannot eat. If you're eating kosher, you can't eat any blood.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
You would roast them, and you would also, of course, have salted them because the salt also draws out
the liquid, yes.
So, that's my memories that come to mind without, as soon as you brought up this subject, these memories came up.
Well, that's exactly what I thought should happen, and that's what I wanted to have. Because I like the idea of, this is the way we did it. And the thing is, what you've described, what I'm discovering is you're describing it really as a very complex family thing. I mean, you don't, I don't know, maybe you, do you ever remember making it and taking it anywhere?
Well, I remember taking it when we would have celebrations, religious celebrations or celebrations after religious services. Now, obviously, if you were Orthodox, you wouldn't be able to carry it from your house to the synagogue unless there were certain accommodations created which makes that possible. But normally you couldn't. But for after the Sabbath or for another day, you could do it. So you would bring it to celebrations or types of potlucks that you might have.
I see. So it did extend beyond the family a little bit.
Yes.
That's really good.
And you might find it at a bar mitzvah or a wedding other events.
Special,
you might
have.
If it was meat meals, you would have chicken liver, chopped chicken liver would be served.
That's good. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
A lot of good information. Thank you.
Thanks for the story. See, that's the idea. That's really what it is.
Well,
that's the thing we like.
That's what I like.
That's what Doyle likes because he, in addition to collecting recipes and enjoying cooking and eating, I think the thing that he likes is the stories that go with it, the fact that it's a matter of folk tradition.
The folklore
that surrounds the
food. And then I like to remind the person that they are a part of that process. And it really becomes richer as you sort of recast your own forms and talk about them in relation to family and the past and things that we did. I've always enjoyed that.
Yeah.
For 30 years, I've enjoyed that.
Please, let's not get into that. Doyle Moore is here. He's the man we like to call our chef in residence. For decades now, he's been a part of this program. We always have a good time spending time with him. Generally, it's the first Wednesday of the month, the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about food and pick some sort of a topic and just say, well, tell us your experiences with this. If you have a story, if you have a recipe, it gets you thinking about something, and sometimes it goes into some odd directions. Any and all of that is certainly fine. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I was interested, and I'm sure that a lot of people have had this experience, the caller story about how people learn to make things by watching somebody else make it.
Yes.
And that probably mostly it would be women, but I'm sure that there are guys who have had the same experience watching their mother make something or their grandmother make something. And I just, it started me wondering, when did people actually start writing down recipes?
That's a very good question because, as I've told you many times, I do not have one recipe written down by my mother. Not a one. Not a one. For nothing.
It was all just
everything was always
this is the way you
right
do it and put it
right
in
on the top of her head, and she always did it. Yeah. And it always was
did she measure things? I mean, really, with cups and spoons and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we had measuring spoons and measuring cups, but they were, I mean, I think it was more, I never learned to scrape the top of the measuring cup with a knife. I mean, she would do it. She might shake it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were measured. It was never out. The only things that never really succeeded, and I always laughed at them because, were her sugar cookies. you never knew what they were going to come out. Too much sugar, then they spread out, and too little flour, and not the right amount of liquid, and all they would be puffed up, or they would be brown and burnt on the bottom, and cooked not cooked on the top, or they'd be all spread out. I just decided that they're just whatever they're going to be, because she never made any connection between what she had done wrong. I find these things out much later that, but then I also find that that's the way you make, what are those? Not tuiles. Those lace cookies.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Well, when I
yeah.
found out that there was lace cookies, I said, my mother's been making this for years.
She didn't know it.
She didn't know it. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk with somebody else.
Yes.
We have another champagne person, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Doyle Moore was looking for the word Fresa, F-R-E.
Oh, Fresa.
F-E-R, not Fesser.
Oh.
And that's a person that keeps eating, sampling food.
Oh, Fresser.
Yeah. So
well, I had never run into the word, and I had to ask the clerk what it was, and he just said, oh, it means much more.
Yeah. And then the gentleman before was talking about roasting liver for
yes.
Orthodox. It's really broiling. And my mother did the same thing. She did it over
broiled.
The gas stove.
Uh-huh.
And she had a little wire rack, so the blood, when it was heating up the liver, would drain down.
Oh, yes.
That was. But when you roast, the blood still stays in the liver. And so that's what I wanted to tell.
Oh, good. I, in doing my quote unquote research, I found out something that I thought, boy, you must have a good sense of humor to come up with all of these answers. The grating. Oh, I think that they were talking about latkes, though. The grating of the potato and the onions with the grater on the side, you inevitably grate some of your knuckles into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that because you can't have blood mixed with that. Someone said, oh, yes, you can if it's 1/60%.
Oh, I don't know.
And there is a name for it.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was an amusing answer to get out of a problem.
But broiling liver.
Broiling, yes.
Is now, a mess.
Oh, really? I know that some of the recipes ask for it to be broiled. In fact, one that I have, broil the liver until it is quite well done. But that was a beef. That's a beef liver. I've never tried broiling chicken livers. I should imagine you have to be careful because they're so small.
Mm-hmm.
They would get gone right away. Did you? Oh, and then my next question of anybody that cooks is, did you make your own schmaltz?
Yes, but I don't do that anymore.
You don't,
because
well,
I want to live longer.
Well, I know. I don't mean to bring these things out so that you worry about them, but it is interesting how we have adopted what we're going to do, and rightfully so. I had never given thought to how you make chicken fat.
Well, it's really a very simple process. You take the skin off the chicken.
Uh huh.
And then you put them in a little pan until it dissolves. You know, the chicken fat melts
right out of the skin. Yes.
And then the other gentleman was talking about the grebens.
Yes.
And that's the cracklings of the chicken.
Oh, yes.
You know, the skin, and that's what you ate. You ate them both.
Well, that don't waste anything mainly.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Good, thanks.
Well, let's talk with somebody else here, someone who apparently must be listening on the internet because I'm told here they're calling from California.
Oh.
On our toll-free line. Hello, line four, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was just calling because I was brought up in a more assimilated family. My family was not particularly Orthodox, but I remember my mother, who always used calf's liver. And it was never beef liver because they had those round things which we used to have to chew out when we had liver and onions. Those horrible things. I still have horrible memories about it. Anyway, she would always make the calf's liver, and I could chop it sometimes, in a rounded bowl, one of those maple bowls. And she used, what do they call those things, demi-lunes?
Mezzaluna.
Mezzaluna.
Well, that's what they call it in Italian,
for
half moon. Certainly didn't call it that.
Yeah, and I'm probably not, yeah.
But, I mean, I remember being just high enough to look into the bowl as she was doing it, and I love chopped liver, and I still love chopped liver. In fact, I made some the other day. But I make mine, I just have sort of moved away even further than my mother did from the traditional part. She wasn't worried particularly about anything, actually, when it came to food, as long as it tasted good. She didn't care whether there was blood in the meat. I suppose they did, in a way, because any meat we ate was always done to death. You know, there was no such thing as rare or medium rare. And certainly if the liver was pink, everyone went, eh, like that and leaped away from it. But I don't know. That's really about all I have to say. It's nice to talk to you guys.
Did you cook the onions or were they raw?
My mother.
Or did you have onions?
Cooked the onions.
Ah.
And I do too. And I cook them a lot. And I sort of braise the livers and then just sort of mush the whole thing up. And then I chop the livers, put in the eggs, and then I cook the. I use a little wine and a little bit of soy sauce, and then I cook that down until it's almost just like this thick thing on the bottom of the pan, and then I throw that in too because it has a lot of flavor.
Mm. Mm. Nice addition.
It's good.
That's good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Other people who are listening are certainly welcome to call. We're a little bit past our midpoint here. It's our monthly cooking show. The man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, has been stopping by here for a long time. First Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock, we talk about cooking. He picks some particular topic, and then we talk about that thing, exchange stories, recipes. Sometimes we wander, and we end up other places, and that's fine. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Did you actually have a particular recipe for this that you wanted to get?
No, but I did collect two. I thought that I had, I guess I it was just in my mind that I had read about 40 different recipes, and I did bring two of them. One is called Wendy's Chopped Liver, and she uses she says, you know, she eat either a pound of beef liver, but she says she thinks chicken is just fine, and five hard-boiled egg whites, and give the yolks to the dog mixed with the liver drippings so you don't waste it, and 1 pound of onions and 2 tablespoons of schmaltz and salt and pepper. And then this one, she likes to chop the egg whites in the food processor and put them into a bowl, and then chop the onions in a food processor and fry them, and then put them in the bowl, and broil the liver, and cut the liver into pieces, and then chop it briefly in the food processor. And says that this works as well as my old hand chopper and wooden bowl. If you're using the hand method, then one simple speed up, use a small strainer and force the hard-boiled egg through it twice, and use your fingers. It allows the egg to get mixed faster and better. So she's right on that cusp of hand done and the machine done. And I thought it was very interesting that the first caller pointed out that, you don't use electricity.
So, well, there would be that. And I suppose even if you had electricity, the grannies would not have had Cuisinarts.
They wouldn't
have them. So you those kinds of things you would had to use some sort of hand method, or I don't even know if there would be. No, pretty much you would. I'm sure you would. One way or another, you would be chopping it by hand.
You would chop it by hand, and it's just called. Well, you want to know how to make it. This is how you make it, and there's no variation on that. I like that.
Yeah.
I like
that. Let's talk with somebody else.
Yes.
Back here in Champaign, line one. Hello.
The stories are really interesting, and I love chopped liver, but I really don't want to make it. So I thought if somebody knew of a place where you could get it locally in the area, when I go to Buffalo Grove where my son lives, I pick up my fix, and it's great. But is there anywhere locally that anybody knows?
I don't know that. I don't know. I can't. The only place I know is in Vernon, Connecticut.
It's kind of a long drive.
That's kind of a long drive. I don't know of a of a place that makes chopped liver that you could buy?
I've lived here 30 years and haven't seen it, but I haven't really looked.
You haven't wanted it, yeah.
I mean, well, it's not the kind of thing you say, hey, do you have chopped? I mean, you know, you don't talk about chopped liver too much, so I just try to get it when I go to St. Louis or Chicago.
Yeah. I imagine it has to be sort of be a local deli that would make it for the immediate people around there. No, I don't know of any. Maybe somebody does.
And I've never looked at recipes really, but there's something like nutmeg in it or something. The ones that I've had.
Oh, really?
It tastes like it.
Yeah.
Some kind of spice, but I can't figure out what it is, and I've never really asked. But I was just curious if you might know that too. But thank you.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. Indeed.
Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what I ran into nothing that put anything other than salt and pepper, and some of them don't even you know do too much salt and pepper. Parsley, there can be parsley in it. That gives a different kind of flavor. I don't really know what it would be.
Well, if people have an answer to either of those questions, someplace in central Illinois you can get chopped liver, or again, if you have a recipe that you would like to share. And here, well, for example, you know, Dole and I both like this, the website called Epicurious, where you can get recipes from various of the popular cooking magazines. And what you can do is you can do a recipe search, and if you just type in what it is you want, you will get recipes. And here, just I've typed in chopped liver, and it came up with 81 hits. So you could spend quite a long time here looking at recipes for chopped liver, including one here from Healthy Jewish Cooking for the amazing low-fat chopped liver. So if you're really even interested in trying to make it more healthy, I think you probably can do that. And I'm sure that there are, as you say, there are a lot of different variations. People would say, well, in my family, you did it this way.
Yep.
And somebody else would say, well, yeah, you got it all wrong there. In my family, you did it this way. And it was a matter of family tradition.
It was family tradition. It was very closely related to the family and the activity, and I find it curious as to why I maybe I've lived too long. You know, I'm thinking of many things that have happened during that you could demean chopped liver, but in the fact it's not the most popular thing. But look, we've had three people that call that still make it. So someone somewhere is still believing in the spirit of chopped liver.
Well, that's and the two things when I went on the web and was just looking at recipes, the two things that struck me was, first of all, that there were all these people there that were either talking about it, having had it when they grew up, talking about what their family recipe was. But, of course, lots of references to the famous expression, what am I, chopped liver. As if to suggest that somehow the dish itself maybe doesn't get respect, and you know, it's a way of indicating for people that they thought they also were not getting respect. And it is, you know, I have to say I've not had it, and all I've done is read descriptions of it, and I'm not a great liver fan, so that maybe influences my feeling about it. But it doesn't even look terribly appealing. It's something about it. The color is
not particularly exciting.
It's not particularly
exciting. I mean, gray food is not really wonderful. But I'm telling you, I really thrilled to that first sandwich. I like that. I liked it because I could taste all of the parts, and I thought, this is an amazing bit of food. I can taste all of the parts of the food, and that. And it was just a little bit more exotic. Oh, there's a lot of variation of no, you must hand chop it because it has to be a little bit grainy and a little bit chunky. No, you can put it in the Cuisinart because it wants to be beautiful smooth. So there's an aesthetic in terms of the texture of this, because the flavor is going to be very similar, but then the texture of it has to be of a certain thing. And I'm sure that if you learn it one way, you don't want to vary that, because you're really trying each time to recreate that memory. You know, rather than, oh, let's find a new way to make chopped liver, I'm going to put, you know, yeah, something else.
Well, that's, I would guess that would be exactly it. It would be that the reason you thought it should be that way was because,
that's the way you know it.
That was the way your grandmother made it.
Right.
And to have it be a puree, it just wouldn't be right because, well, that's just not what it is.
You know? That's what your Aunt Shirley could do.
Well, we all know about Shirley. We have a caller here in Stell, not all that far away from here, community, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
It seems probable that you all are not yet aware of the work of the Weston A. Price Foundation in Washington, D.C., or Sally Fallon, who has written a huge cookbook with recipes from around the world, but it pains one who now understands that work to hear people worry and stew about cholesterol and oil and fat and things like that, because Dr. Weston A. Price was a Cleveland dentist at the turn of the 20th century who went around the world to visit the indigenous cultures that had not yet been touched by civilized food.
Uh-huh.
He found out that they had the most perfect teeth, the most perfect bones.
Oh.
They were all handsome people. And strong and hearty, and then the cultures that he studied where civilized food had come in, that is, food with long shelf life or food that has been processed.
Oh, yes.
Then they started having uneven teeth and narrow faces and, you know, aberrations in this perfect bone structure. And so he thought that he would find, as he studied all these cultures, a vegan or a vegetarian culture, but there was not one single one. And even though there was a tribe in Africa that lives entirely on goat milk yogurt, but or almost entirely, I'm sure they didn't live entirely on it, but it was so liberating, and I personally feel so much stronger and healthier now that I'm aware of that. And if you're interested, you could go to WestonAPriceFoundation.org, I think it is, and explore this. But Sally Fallon's cookbook is called Nourishing Traditions.
Nourishing, yes.
But it is so worthy of exploration and implementing it in your diet.
There are a lot. Every once in a while, I remember many, many different diets being explained and such. For a long period of time, the Japanese diet was very special, and until someone decided that you shouldn't eat that much rice, and so then it has fallen. And right now, I think the latest thing I've heard, and it interests me because it's the Mediterranean diet that uses no. It uses oils and such, and is not really heavy on butter, but uses olive oil and other things, and always a lot of fish. That's why I say you got to have fish 3 times a week, and that the Mediterranean diet has all of a sudden been sort of boosted back up again just last week.
I think that's because there's so many Italians in the Food Network. Frankly,
well, it might
be. That diet is wonderful, except for the pasta made out of flour that has no food value left in it.
Right.
Now, the things you're talking about today, liver and eggs, are the two most nutritious things you could put in your mouth anywhere.
Good source of iron, yes.
Well, not only that, Doyle, but if you look in a book that says what foods contain certain things,
yeah.
Eggs and liver have practically
everything.
Minerals, vitamins, you know, they are both so good for us, and it's just the food industry that's made us
Well,
get out of shape about that.
That and the fact that we are so affluent, it's called I can eat as much of anything that I want, and we eat too much of everything.
Yes, that's true. So, well, we eat recreationally
because
we no longer have satisfying work, satisfying families, and things like that.
Exactly. And that, I think, gets into the way of trying to eat sensibly. I always remember when Julia Child, in the 60s, started out and was becoming famous, and then people would go to her house and eat and such things. And I know a couple of people who have been served by Julia Child. It was, well, it's absolutely delicious, but they're the smallest pieces of anything you could ever get. And that was her whole point was, hey, really good food, don't eat it until you're stuffed.
Yes. And now here's another important thing that Sally Fallon and Dr. Price found out was that the saturated fats, which we've been made to believe are so deleterious, are what strengthens the immune system. So if we cut out all that saturated fat, butter and coconut oil and palm oil, then we are going to have diseases that we would not otherwise have.
You're right. If you get carried away with fashion, you know, becoming fashionable in the way what you eat and the way you eat it, yes, you can make a detriment. And the answer is yes, that will happen. So you have to guard against that. So you have to moderation in all things except moderation.
Yes. Now, Sally Fallon says that olive oil is the best of the vegetable oils, but the problem with the vegetable oils is that they are so high in omega-6, which can cause a lot of health problems.
Well, just don't use too much of it. Just pull back on that. That's good. Mm. Well, I'm glad to know those things. That's really good.
Yeah,
thank
I appreciate
you.
The comments of the caller. I just need to kind of jump in here because we just have about 5 minutes left.
Dear.
And we're the clock is ticking here, and I want to particularly encourage other folks, if you'd like to give us a call, to join in the conversation here. Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. He's the guy here in the chair. He's here on the first Wednesday of the month, generally, if he's around, and has been doing the show with us for a long time to talk about cooking. And we always have a good time talking about all of our various experiences with food growing up. A lot of it does indeed have to do with family and different things we like, what we don't, how you make things, what your version of something is. We've exchanged a lot of stories and recipes over time and always had a good time. Even if it starts out seeming something a little strange, you know, you never know where you're going to go. So 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I guess it really does. It's my joke is, you know, that about some particular food is that's fine if you happen to have been raised that way. Or maybe it was Garrison Keillor whose joke is about the diner. It's home cooking just like home if you happen to have been raised that way. Well, you know, it does have an awful lot to do with what it is that you were given when you grew up.
Yep.
What was there. And when you're talking about people's traditional diets, I mean, after all, you can only eat what you got. And if you're at the point where you have to eat what's there, well, you eat what's there. And you make the best of it. And I also think, isn't it also true that almost no matter where you go, there is something that people don't, there are food taboos, there is something.
Oh, yes.
That there's some reason where you don't eat that.
Yes. My father had two taboos that I've never traced down. Never eat chili with milk and never eat fish with milk. And I do not know where he got that idea. But you simply were not allowed to have a glass of milk if you were having chili or eating fish.
And because what, he thought it would just be bad for you?
I'm sorry. No more. I have no more information.
Know. Okay.
No more information. Just don't. That was it.
All right.
You just don't.
Well, just write that down, folks. We have a couple of people that we want to talk to here in the time that is left. Someone on the cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I just remember going up to Carson's Rib House up in Chicago on Wells Street.
Uh-huh.
And they always had a big bowl of chopped chicken livers up there.
Oh, my, yes.
Now, I don't know if they're official chopped livers or what, but they had a little bowl of chopped onion there, and I think they had some capers and crackers.
Yes.
And I'd go up there and ruin my appetite, sit there waiting to get a table.
That's good.
I thought, you know, I don't know if they all have it, but the one on Wells does.
The one on Wells Street. That's good.
So every time you're up there, take a look at it.
You can find it. That's good. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's go on tier two, somebody else. This is line four, and I think the caller's in Sonneman. Is that right?
That's right.
Line four. Well, go ahead.
I have an old recipe book here that has a chopped liver paste recipe.
Oh, good.
This calls for a half pound of chicken or beef liver.
Yes.
One large onion sliced fine. A cup of chicken fat.
A cup. Wow.
I thought that was amazing.
Yes.
Six hard-boiled eggs, and for garnish, apparently a slice of rind.
How many eggs? How many hard-boiled eggs?
Six.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And the way the instructions say, fry onion and liver gently in the fat. When cool, food grinder with egg and raw onion using the flat knife.
Oh, onion ground, yes. Yes, there is. The we hadn't talked about that, but then there are a lot of uses of the food grinder. Yeah.
And this was before the day of.
Right, of course, of course.
Salt and pepper to taste. And then add more chicken fat for a richer paste.
For a richer paste. And this was called chicken liver paste?
Yes, chopped liver paste.
Chopped liver
made with either beef or chicken.
Paste, chopped liver paste. Well, that's what pate means, is paste,
yes,
yeah. Well, that's good. Where did that book come from? What?
Well, it's a Methodist ladies' cookbook.
Oh, I see, yes.
And the lady in question was a Jewish man, so I take it that she had a family recipe.
That she had a real family recipe. Mm-hmm. Liver, onions, and chicken fat and eggs, and salt and pepper. It's pretty direct, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, well, thanks for the call. Somebody else again wants to call real quick. I'm sure we can get in the call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. So you actually now, after your experience on the road to Teaneck.
Yes.
Having had liver in, was it New Jersey?
It was in New Jersey, they called it the New York deli.
Oh, yeah.
They called it a New York deli, New York style. And it was, here I am. I must not say that. I've never been in a New York deli, so I wouldn't know one if I saw one. But I believed the signs that were up. And there were a lot. It was really very tasty.
And so you actually now, after having come back, you made this at your own.
I didn't bring anything to you, but I had some last night for sort of, goes real good with scotch. Don't know if that's kosher, but I had a little chopped liver with scotch last night.
Well, a little scotch might even give me the courage to try it. I might have to have a little scotch first. Take the edge off.
Well, I thought somewhere we would surely have run into it. Well,
I have to say, you know, I've had various kinds of pâté, I guess, but I have never particularly been fond of liver, and I'm not exactly sure why. Partly to me, it seems almost to have a metallic taste. Something about it,
it's the iron.
Do it. Well, maybe that is. Maybe that is. It just doesn't do anything.
Now, a friend and I share the enjoyment of making a liver pate that is a little more complex because it has ham and liver and butter, lots of butter, and parsley and onions, and that's all. That's all sautéed until it's quite well cooked, and then that's ground into a fine paste. And then our only argument is that he likes to put cognac in, and I put in bourbon. Well, that helps it go along quite a ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I was going to tell you that, and this was because of you. We didn't see each other in January, but I made fruitcake.
Oh, you did. Oh, good
December,
for you.
I made fruitcake.
Good.
And I used Elton Brown's recipe, and I thought it was really, really good. And everybody around here probably got tired of me talking about it because I kept saying, you know, I made this fruitcake, and darn it, it was about the best thing I ever had in my life. It was really good. And I wanted to make another batch so that I could – I knew it's not something you could eat a lot of, but I figured, well, you could have a bite.
I would eat it daily, but not very much. Yeah. I thought of you because I saw a cartoon where a piece of fruitcake was lying on the psychiatrist's couch. He says, I have a feeling that nobody likes me.
Well, you see, I was, as I said before when we talked, I was convinced that there was such a thing as a good fruitcake, and that fruitcake had gotten a bad rap, and that if you make it and you use good ingredients, and myself, I don't believe in those little Day-Glo orange and red and green things in there. But, you know, I thought it was very good.
Alton Brown does have a rather rarefied recipe that probably suits your taste. You know?
Yeah, it was quite good. So, well, I don't know. Maybe if I'm really motivated, I'll make some more and bring some the next time.
Bring some. I mean, make some, wrap them up, and put them in the freezer, and have them next November.
That would be good.
Oh, no, that is so good. That'd be so good. And that's what you'd you take the time to make them, but then put them away and let them ripen.
Well, that's what it was funny because my wife, she had some right off and said, heck with aging. don't mess around with aging.
You're right.
It's ready to go now.
You're right. All right. But aging does give it a little heft. Yeah.
Well, there, we'll leave it for this time around with the promise that Doyle will be back.
What are we going to talk about next month?
I don't know. So he'll have some divine inspiration, and he'll let us know. Doyle Moore is the man we like to call our chef in residence. He shows up here once a month, always on the first Wednesday. We talk about cooking.